This, in turn, implies a seeking for harmony, an element that is in apparent conflict with the objectives of combat. The ideal goal of Budo is combat in which aggressive energy is perfectly balanced by its opposite component, harmony. Kendo, 19th and 20th centuries. The conception and practice of Kendo developed and took on definitive form toward the end of the Meiji period, 1868 to 1912, in the latter part of the 19th century and the first half of the 20th. The name itself dates from this period. Kendo is a modern reformulation of the warrior's art of the sword, in which combat is practiced mainly with shinai and armor. Thus, the Kendo of today is not exactly the same art practiced by the sword masters of old. Although this period was short, it was important because of the intermediary role it played between the Kendo that was a continuation of the historical warrior's practice and modern Kendo. From 1945 to the present. The destruction in Japan in 1945 was major, and in the shock of defeat, Japanese society as a whole was challenged. After the war, Japan was occupied, the pressure exercised by the Allies was heavy, and the practice of the martial arts was forbidden. Practitioners of karate were the first to get permission to resume their discipline, which they presented as a form of boxing. This comparison to Western boxing allowed them to put karate in the category of a sport. This did not work for Kendo, for even when practiced with bamboo swords, it continued to evoke the strange barbarity of wartime Japan. Kendo practitioners tried to perpetuate Kendo under the name Shinai Kyogi, game-like competition with shinai, by transforming the techniques of Kendo to make it resemble a sport-like activity that would be acceptable in the eyes of the occupiers. To this end, they glossed over as much as possible the traditional aspect of the discipline, with its costumes and customs, and followed the model of European fencing. This experience continued to be one of the shaping factors in the transformations that led to contemporary Kendo. Indeed, when Kendo was able to resume in 1952, it was in the context of a society that had changed, and the spirit of the practice had been changed by integrating into it the modern idea of a combat sport. In parallel with all this, a certain number of ancient schools of the sword continued, and continued down to the present day, to transmit their techniques in the traditional form but with a very limited number of practitioners. Let us summarize the main lines of this history. In the beginning, the nature of the sword was obvious. The blade was the main thing. It killed in a bloody way. Spirituality had little place in the practice of the sword. In the next phase, the sword continued to be there, but it was in a scabbard. It killed less frequently, almost none at all. Sword practice was more a matter of technique, and it coexisted with spirituality. The notion of do developed in association with the consciousness of one's duty toward the ruler. With the disappearance of the class of warriors and the prohibition against carrying a sword, the shinai supplanted the sword in the practice of the art, and a new conception of the way, do, was formed in connection with the idea of budo. This was a modern reforging of tradition that proposed as its overall objective the training of the human being as such in conformity with the expectations of 19th century society. Chronology of Musashi's life. Certain contradictions exist among the documents relating to Miyamoto Musashi's life. I have put together the following chronology by selecting the most plausible ones among the currently accepted hypotheses concerning the events of Musashi's life in view of the elements actually known to us. According to the ancient system, A person is considered to be 1 year old during the course of the year following his birth. For example, according to the Gorin no Sho, Musashi fought at the age of 13. But according to the modern system currently in use, this corresponds to the age of 12. In references to Musashi's age in the following chronology, I have used the modern system. 1578. Birth of Jirota, older brother of Musashi, who died in 1660. Musashi also seems to have had two sisters. 1584. Birth of the child who was to be known as Miyamoto Musashi, during the third month in the village of Miyamoto Sanomo, Mimasaki region. He received the name of Bennosuke. His father's name was Hirata Munisai, and his mother's was Omasa. His mother died on the fourth day of the third month. Munisai then married the young Yoshiko, who would act as Bennosuke's mother. 1587, 3 years old. Around this time, Yoshiko divorced Hirata Munisai and left for the village of Hirafuku with Bennosuke. Her family having been scattered by war, she was taken in by the adoptive son of her uncle, Tasumi Masahisa. Later, he would marry her. He already had two sons by his first marriage. Yoshiko, being uneasy about Bennosuke's future, placed him under the care of her uncle Dorin, who was a monk in the temple of Shoreang. Bennosuke received his education from Dorin and Tasumi. 1589, 5 years old. On the orders of his lord, Shinmen Iganokami, Munisai killed Honiden Gekinosuke, 27 years old, who was one of his disciples in the study of strategy. 1592, 8 years old. Certain documents record that Munisai died this year, but this is contradicted by other documents. It is probable that the person who died at this time was Hirata Takehito, not Hirata Munisai. 1596, 12 years old. Bennosuke fought a duel with Arima Kihei of the Shinto Ryu school. The fight took place in the village of Hirafuku Mura. 1599, 15 years old. Bennosuke left the region. He visited his sister, Ogin, and her husband, Hirao Yoemon, who lived in the village of Miyamoto, and gave them the family possessions, weapons, furniture, the family genealogy, and so on. In one of the documents of the village of Miyamoto, we find the following passage. Musashi left his village 90 years ago. He was accompanied by his friend Moriiwa Hikobe. At the time of their separation, the latter received from Musashi a bokken made of black wood. Musashi then went to the village of Hirafukumura to take leave of his mother Yoshiko and his stepfather Tasumi. He traveled to Tajima, Hyogo, where he fought a duel with a martial arts practitioner adept named Akiyama. 1600, 16 years old. In the Battle of Sekigahara, Musashi was part of the Army of the West. During the seventh month, he took part in an attack on Fushimi Castle, his first battle. During the eighth month, he took part in the defense of Gifu Castle. On the 15th of the ninth month, he took part in the Battle of Sekigahara. The West lost in a few hours. Musashi was in the battalion of Lord Ukita, who was the liege lord of Lord Shinmen, of whom Musashi's family were vassals. Following this defeat, Shinmen Sōkan took refuge on Kyushu. Musashi perhaps also traveled in the direction of Kyushu. Musashi perhaps also traveled in the direction of Kyushu. One legend tells us that he trained on Mount Hikosan during his stay on Kyushu. 1604, 20 years old. On the 8th of the third month, Musashi engaged in a victorious duel with Yoshioka Seijuro in the hamlet of Rendaino in the outskirts of Kyoto. Victorious duel against Yoshioka Denshichiro, younger brother of Seijiro, who had then challenged him. Combat against the clan and dojo of Yoshioka at Ichijoji, Kyoto. Musashi won the victory and killed Matashichiro, the nominal head of the Yoshioka, aged 12 or 13. According to certain documents, it was after these fights that Musashi went to Hozoin in Nara to engage in combat with the monks there, who were experts with the lance. After Nara, Musashi went to Banshu, Hyogo, and stayed at Enkoji Temple. The monk in charge of Enkoji liked the martial arts and had turned a part of the temple into a martial arts dojo. The monk's brother, Tada Hanzaburo, received teachings from Musashi in this temple. At this time, Musashi called his school Enmei-ryu, and Tada Hanzaburo received the certificate of transmission of this school from Musashi. Later, Tada Genzaemon, the grandson of Hanzaburo, founded the Ensu-ryu on the basis of the Enmei-ryu and the art of swordsmanship called Mizu no Iaijutsu, the art of drawing the sword. Musashi traveled in various regions of western Japan, using Enkoji as a base. 1605, 22 years old. One of the first certificates of transmission written by Musashi is dated this year. It ends as follows. The one and only under the sky, Miyamoto Musashi no Kami. Fujiwara Yoshitsune, signature, hand executed seal. To Mr. Ochiai Todaemon, the auspicious day of the 11th year of the Keicho era, 1606. 1607, 23 years old. A certificate of transmission written by Musashi's father, Miyamoto Munisai, for his disciple Tomooka Kanjuro, is dated the 5th of the 9th month, 1607, which proves that he was still living that year. Musashi went to Edo, passing by way of Nara and Yagyu. He fought a duel with Shishido Baiken, an expert with the Kusarigama, a sickle to which a chain with a steel weight on the end is attached. 1607 to 1611, 23 to 27 years old. Having arrived in Edo, Musashi fought a duel with two advanced practitioners of the Yagyu school, Oseto and Tsujikaze. In Edo, he also fought Muso Gonnosuke, an expert in the art of the staff, whom he defeated without killing him. On the basis of his experience with Musashi, Muso developed his school of the art of the staff, the Shinto Musoryu. Musashi remained in Edo 3 or 4 years, traveling from time to time in the vicinity. 1609, 25 years old. Musashi participated in the clearing of new fields, working the earth with the peasants of Gyotoku in Shimousa, Chiba. Another document puts this episode in 1611. 1611, 27 years old. Musashi went to Kyoto. He visited the Myoshinji Temple, where he practiced Zazen. According to one document, at this temple he met Nagaoka Sado, a vassal of Lord Hosokawa Tadaoki, who became the lord of northern Kyushu after the Battle of Sekigahara. Nagaoka had been a student of Musashi's father, Miyamoto Munisai, who had moved to Kyushu. It is possible that Musashi made Nagaoka's acquaintance when he visited his father on Kyushu. Nagaoka spoke to Musashi about an accomplished martial arts adept named Sasaki Kojiro and proposed that he organize a duel between Kojiro and Musashi. We may surmise that this was a political move against the Sasaki clan and not merely a matter of a duel. 1612, 28 years old. Victorious duel against Sasaki Kojiro on the 13th of the 4th month, on the island of Funajima, north of Kyushu. 1613, 29 years old. Musashi spent a period of time meditating at a temple on Mount Koyasan in Kishu, Wakayama Prefecture. He later stayed in Nagoya and trained some disciples, among them Takemura, a practitioner of the art of the shuriken. 1614, 30 years old. 10th month, the winter battle of Osaka. This was Musashi's fourth battle. The usual view is that Musashi was part of the Army of the West, but I believe he fought in the Army of the East under Tokugawa Ieyasu. 1615, 31 years old. 4th month, summer battle of Osaka. In the course of the 5th month, the Army of the East won a decisive victory. 1616 to 1617, 32 to 33 years old. Musashi stayed at Akashi at the invitation of Lord Ogasawara. There, he taught the sword and the art of the shuriken. He also participated in the construction of Akashi Castle. 1618 to 1620, 34 to 36 years old. Musashi adopted a male child who later took the name Miyamoto Mikinosuke. 1621, 37 years old. At Himeji, Musashi fought victoriously against Miyake Gunbei and three other adepts of the Togunryu in the presence of the Lord of Himeji. Musashi participated in the development of the plan of the town of Himeji. He also directed the creation of the gardens of several temples there. 1622, 38 years old. Musashi's adoptive son, Miyamoto Mikinosuke, acquired the rank of vassal of the fief of Himeji. Musashi departed again on his travels. 1623, 39 years old. Musashi went to Edo. 1624, 40 years old. Musashi lived in Edo. He established relations with Hayashi Razan, a Confucianist scholar who was part of the shogun's government. Some historians advocate the theory that Hayashi recommended Musashi to the shogun as a swordmaster. At this time, the shogun already had two principal swordmasters, Ono Jiroemon and Yagyu Munenori. Musashi's application to the shogun ended in failure. Musashi departed, traveling in the direction of Oshu, northern Japan. He got as far as Yamagata. He adopted a second son, to whom he gave the name Miyamoto Iori. He traveled with Iori, passing through Edo, then Hokuriku, Kyoto, Ise, Kishu, finally arriving at Osaka, where he stayed for some time. According to one document, the adoption of Iori took place when he was at Yamagata. Other documents indicate that Iori was his nephew, and the adoption took place when he returned to the region of Banshu. 1625, 41 years old, meeting with Mikinosuke in Osaka. 1626, 42 years old. In the course of the 5th month, Miyamoto Mikinosuke ended his life through seppuku, following his lord into death in accordance with tradition. Miyamoto Iori entered the service of Lord Ogasawara of Akashi, probably in the course of this year. Musashi again pressed through Nagoya, where his attempt to become a vassal of the Lord of Owari did not meet with success. This lord belonged to the family of the shogun and was one of its most powerful members. Musashi searched for a lord worthy of his level and strategy. 1633, 49 years old. Lord Hosokawa Tadatoshi left Kokura for the fief of Kumamoto. Lord Ogasawara Tadasane, coming from Akashi, succeeded him at Kokura. Iori, who was in the service of this lord with the rank of vassal, accompanied him. According to certain documents, Musashi stayed at Izumo, Shimane, where he fought a duel with the vassal of the lord of Matsumoto Castle, Matsudaira Naomasa, and then with this lord himself. The lord became his student. Musashi remained for a time in this fief to teach. According to other documents, Lord Matsudaira established his residence in Izumo in 1638. If this is the case, the dates are in conflict. 1634, 50 years old. Musashi returned to Kyushu. He arrived at Kokura, where the lord was now Ogasawara Tadasane, to whom Musashi had taught the sword and the art of the shuriken. Lord Ogasawara organized a duel for Musashi against a famous lance specialist, Takada Matabe. Musashi defeated him. 1637 to 1638, 53 to 54 years old. During the 10th month of 1637, the Christians of Shimabara, Kyushu, revolted against the regime, and the siege of Shimabara began. Musashi participated in the battles with Iori and directed Ogasawara's troops. Iori became the principal vassal of Lord Ogasawara. This was the sixth and final time Musashi participated in a battle. A letter from Musashi to Lord Maruoka Yuzaemon dates to this year. At this time, Nagaoka Sado, principal vassal of Lord Hosoka, probably began applying to his lord to take on Musashi as a vassal. 1639, 55 years old. Nagaoka arrived in Kokura, charged with the responsibility for the affairs of this fief. He visited Musashi, to whom he directly passed on an invitation from his lord that had already been indicated by letter. The time passed without a decision being made, and Hosoka continued with his approaches to Musashi and also to Ogasawara. 1640, 56 years old. Musashi decided to go to Lord Hosoka. At the end of the first month, he took up residence at Kumamoto. Correspondence between Musashi and the representatives of Lord Hosoka. Lord Hosoka Tadatoshi organized a duel for Musashi, meant as a means of training against Ujii Magoshiro, principal martial arts master of this fief. Musashi was victorious. 1641, 57 years old. In the course of the second month, Musashi wrote the Hyōhō Sanju Gokajō for Lord Hosoka Tadatoshi and practiced the arts, calligraphy, painting, tea ceremony. During the third month, Hosoka Tadatoshi died at the age of 56. His 18 vassals followed him into death, Junshi. Letter from Musashi recommending his third adoptive son, Hirao Yoemon, to one of the principal vassals of the Owari fief. Hirao Yoemon became Owari master of arms. 1642, 58 years old. Musashi fell ill and suffered attacks of neuralgia. 1643, 59 years old. Musashi departed for Mount Iwato, located near Kumamoto, where he began living in Reigando Cave. He had a low table there, and on the 10th of the 10th month, he began to compose the Gorin no Sho. Letter from Musashi to Lord Hosokawa Mitsuhita, dated the 8th of the 10th month. 1645, 61 years old. Musashi lived at Reigando and composed the Gorin no Sho, which he completed during the second month. Musashi sensed the approach of death. On the 13th of the 4th month, he wrote a letter of farewell to the three principal vassals of Hosokawa, Lords Shikibu, Kenmotsu, and Uemon, with whom he was particularly closely connected. He dedicated his last work, the Gorin no Sho, to his disciple Terao Magonojo, and gave the latter's younger brother, Terao Motomenosuke, his own copy of the Hyōhō Sanju Gokajō. On the 12th of the 5th month, Musashi distributed his possessions among those close to him. During his final days, he wrote the 21 articles of the Dokkōdō. He died on the 19th of the 5th month. We do not know for sure whether Musashi died at his home or in Reigando Cave. His hair was buried at Mount Iwato, and his body, dressed in warrior's armor, was interred, in accordance with his wishes, near the main road, so that he would be able to greet the Hosokawa lords on their trips in the direction of Edo, where they periodically had to go to visit the shogun. It was in a cave called Reigando, Le, soul, or spirit, Gan, rock, Do, cave, where Musashi, at the age of 60, set himself up to write. He spent the last 2 years of his life there. This cave had long been considered a sacred place. It was in the most remote part of a group of lands belonging to Iwatodera Temple. It was deep in a mountainous setting, surrounded by rocks with vivid forms, between which water fell in cascades. Near the entrance to the cave, there were several statues of deities. It was an unfrequented spot, reserved for meditation. Musashi indicated that he began writing the Gorin no Sho in this place at 4 o'clock in the morning on the 10th day of the 10th month of the 20th year of the Kanei period. Why did he choose this place and this moment to begin his work? To begin the main written work of his life in this manner says something about Musashi's art of swordsmanship. Beginning this work meant ending his life, and in fact, he died shortly after finishing it. To accomplish his endeavor in just the right way, he had to begin it in this place filled with the mysterious power of the mountain, before the break of day. He had to begin in a deep state of calm, by the light of a lamp, in the cool of the shadows. He welcomed the dawn by writing. This approach was indispensable for his act of writing, to become one with the nature of the sacred beings. According to the beliefs of those days, morning is filled with positive yang energy, which is at the origin of creation. Thus, Musashi was not without reasons for choosing this hour. Through paying homage to heaven and bowing before Kannon and the Buddha, his act of writing became mingled with their presence. Through this, it became a sacred act. But when he bowed to these sacred powers, it was not in the manner of a Christian bowing to an altar. In Japanese belief, the sacred takes on many forms that are accessible to human beings. By undertaking his writing in the way he did, Musashi entered the sacred world. Before his death, he wrote, "I respect the Buddha and the gods, but I do not rely on them." This sentence is found in a short text entitled The Way to be Followed Alone, Dokodo, which he wrote after the Gorin no Sho. These two texts seem to have been written with the last of Musashi's life force, for it was only a week after having added to the end of his manuscript the name of his successor that Musashi died on the 19th day of the 5th month of the 2nd year of Shōhō, 1645. Musashi bequeathed the Gorin no Sho to one of his disciples, Terao Magonojo Katsunobu. Later, this work would be copied by another of Musashi's disciples, who, on the 5th day of the 2nd month of the 7th year of Kanbun, 1667, gave this copy to his disciple, Yamamoto Gennosuke. It is through this copy that we know the work. The original of the Gorin no Sho, written in Musashi's own hand, has never been found. Writings on the Five Elements. Gorin no Sho. The Scroll of Earth. School of the Two Heavens United, Niten Ichiryu, is the name that I give to the way of strategy. In this text, I am going to explain for the first time what I have been studying in depth for many years. At the beginning of the 10th month of the 20th year of Kanrei, 1643, I came to Mount Iwato in the Higo Prefecture of Kyushu to write. I pay homage to heaven. I prostrate to the goddess Kannon, and I turn toward the Buddha. My name is Shinmen Musashi no Kami, Fujiwara no Genshin, and I am a warrior, born in the prefecture of Harima. My life now adds up to 60 years. I have trained in the way of strategy since my youth, and at the age of 13, I fought a duel for the first time. My opponent was called Arima Kihei, a sword adept of the Shinto Ryu, and I defeated him. At the age of 16, I defeated a powerful adept by the name of Akiyama, who came from the prefecture of Tajima. At the age of 21, I went up to Kyoto and fought duels with several adepts of the sword from famous schools, but I never lost. Then I traveled in several fiefs and regions in order to meet the adepts of different schools. I fought more than 60 times, but not once was I beaten. All that happened between my 13th and my 28th or 29th year. At the age of 30, I reflected, and I saw that although I had won, I had done so without having reached the ultimate level of strategy. Perhaps it was because my natural disposition prevented me from straying from universal principles. Perhaps it was because my opponent lacked ability in strategy. I continued to train and to seek from morning till night to attain to a deeper principle. When I reached the age of 50, I naturally found myself on the way of strategy. Since that day, I have lived without having a need to search further for the way. When I apply the principle of strategy to the ways of different arts and crafts, I no longer have need for a teacher in any domain. Thus, in composing this book, I do not borrow from the ancient Buddhist or Confucianist writings. I do not use ancient examples from the chronicles or the tradition of the military art. I began writing on the 10th of the 10th month, at night, at the hour of the tiger, with the aim of expressing the true idea of my school, letting my mind reflect in the mirror of the way of heaven and the way of Kannon. Strategy is the practice that is necessary in warrior families. A person who directs warfare must learn it, and soldiers must also be familiar with it. Nowadays, those who know the way of strategy well are rare. As far as the way is concerned, several of them exist. The law of Buddha is the way that saves people. The way of Confucianism is the way that leads to correctness in literature. Medicine is the way that cures illnesses. The poet teaches the way of poetry. There exist a number of ways in the arts. That of the man of taste, that of the practitioner of archery, and those of other arts and crafts. Adepts train in these in their fashion, according to their manner of thinking, and are fond of them in accordance with their dispositions. But very few like the way of strategy. First of all, warriors must familiarize themselves with what is known as the two ways, literature and the martial arts. That is their way. Even if you are clumsy, you must persevere in strategy because of your position. That which a warrior must always have in his mind is the way of death. But the way of death is not reserved only for warriors. A monk, a woman, a peasant, any person can resolve to die for the sake of a social obligation or honor. In the way of strategy that warriors practice, the aim of action must be to surpass others in all domains. A warrior has to win in combat against one or several opponents, bring fame to his lord's name and his own, and establish his position owing to the virtue of strategy. Some people perhaps think that even if they learn the way of strategy, it will not be useful in real practice. On this point, it is sufficient to train in it for it to be useful at all times, and to teach it for it to be useful in all things. This is how the true way of strategy must be. Concerning the way of strategy. From China to Japan, over a long time, a person who practices this way has been known as an adept of strategy. For a warrior, it is not possible not to study it. Nowadays, there are certain people to be found everywhere who declare themselves accomplished practitioners of strategy, but in general, they practice only the sword. Recently, the Shinto priests of Kantori and Kashima in the prefecture of Hitachi have founded schools, saying that their art was transmitted to them by the gods, and they have propagated their art in various fiefs. Among the 10 talents and the 7 arts that have long been known, strategy is considered to be a pragmatic domain. Since it is a pragmatic domain, it is not appropriate to limit it just to the technique of the sword. On the basis of the principles of the sword alone, you will not be able to understand the sword well, and you will be far from being in accord with the principles of strategy. There are people who make a profession out of selling the arts. They treat themselves as articles of merchandise and produce objects with a view to selling them. This attitude is tantamount to the act of separating the flower from the fruit, and it must be said that the fruit in this case does not amount to much. They adorn the way of strategy with flowery colors, lay out a display of techniques, and teach their way by creating first one dojo, then another. Someone who might want to learn such a way with the goal of making money should keep in mind the saying, "Strategy, inadequately learned, is the cause of serious wounds." In general, 4 ways exist for traversing human life: those of the warrior, the peasant, the artisan, and the merchant. The first is the way of the peasant. Peasants prepare various tools and are vigilant with regard to the changing of the seasons, year after year. That is the way of the peasant. The second is the way of the merchant. A manufacturer of sake, for example, buys the necessary materials and makes profits that correspond to the quality of his product. This is the way he goes through life. All merchants pass through human life, making more or less profit from their businesses. That is the way of business. The third is the way of the warrior. Warriors must make various weapons and know the richness of each weapon. That is the way of the warrior. Without learning how to handle weapons, without knowing the advantages of each of them, a warrior is lacking somewhat in education. The fourth is the way of the artisan. A carpenter follows his way by skillfully making various tools and knowing well how to use them. He correctly lays out construction plans using block cords and a square. He goes through life with his art without wasting a moment. This is the way the 4 ways should be: those of the warrior, the peasant, the artisan, and the merchant. I am going to speak of strategy by comparing it to the way of the carpenter. This comparison has to do with a house constructed by carpenters. We speak, for example, of a noble house, a warrior house, or the 4 houses. We also speak of the decline or continuation of a house. In the realm of art, we also speak of a house in the sense of a school or a style. It is because the term house is used in these ways that I make the comparison with the way of the carpenter. The word daiku, carpenter, is written dai, fully, ku, to be very clever at. In the same way, the way of strategy is built upon ingenuity of great fullness and scope. This is why I compare it to the way of the carpenter. If you want to learn strategy, you must contemplate these writings and train ceaselessly, the master and disciple together, so that the master is like the needle and the disciple is like the thread. Comparison of the way of strategy with the way of the carpenter. A general, like a master carpenter, should know the overall rules of the country and adjust the rules of his own province to fit with them, just as the way of the master carpenter consists in regulating the measurements of the house he is going to construct. The master carpenter learns the structural pattern for building a tower or a temple and knows the construction plans for palaces and fortresses. He builds houses by making use of people. In this way, the chief carpenter and the chief warrior resemble each other. In constructing a house, one must first choose wood that is suitable. For the front pillars, wood is chosen that is straight, without knots, and of good appearance. For the rear pillars, one chooses wood that is straight and sturdy, even if it has a few knots. It is appropriate to use woods that are less strong but of handsome appearance for the sills, the lintels, the sliding doors, and the shoji. The house will last for a long time, even if knotted or twisted wood is used, on the condition that the strength needed for the different parts of the house is accurately assessed, and the qualities of the wood used are carefully examined. It is appropriate to use somewhat weak, knotty, or twisted wood for scaffolding, and then afterward for heating. In using men, the master carpenter must know the qualities of the carpenters. In accordance with their high, medium, or low ability, he must assign them different tasks, such as construction of the tokonoma, of the sliding doors and the shoji, or of the sills, lintels, and ceilings. It is appropriate to have support framing done by those with not much skill, and wedges made by the most skillful. If one is able to discern the qualities of men in this manner, work progresses quickly and efficiently. Being fast and efficient, being vigilant with regard to the surroundings, knowing substance and its function, knowing the high, medium, or low level of ambient energy, knowing how to energize the situation, and knowing the limits of things. Above all, a master carpenter must possess all those. It is the same for the principle of strategy. The way of strategy. Both a vassal and a soldier are similar to a carpenter. The latter sharpens his tools, makes other tools, and carries them in his carpenter's box. Following the orders of the master, he accomplishes his work efficiently. His measurements will be exact for the smallest detail work, as well as for the long external corridors. Sometimes he roughs out the pillars and beams with his adze, or planes the posts of the tokonoma and the shelves. Sometimes he carves open work in planks or sculpts wood. Such is the law of the carpenter. If he learns to practice the techniques of woodworking and also learns how to draw up plans, he can later become a master. A carpenter must keep his tools well sharpened and always maintain them. Only a specialist in woodworking knows how to make a precious box for a statue of the Buddha, a bookshelf, a table, a stand for a lamp, all the way down to a chopping block or a lid. Either a vassal or a soldier is similar to a carpenter. They should ponder this well. A carpenter must always keep his mind attentive to the following things. The wood must not lose its shape. The joints must hold. He must plane well but avoid over-smoothing. The wood must not warp later on. If you study the way of strategy, it is necessary to examine attentively what I write here, down to the least detail. I write on strategy in 5 scrolls. I write my work in 5 scrolls, the scrolls of earth, water, fire, wind, and heaven, in order to show clearly the qualities of each of the 5 ways. In the scroll of earth, I present an overall vision of the way of strategy and the point of view of my school. It is difficult to arrive at the true way relying on the way of the sword alone. It is appropriate to understand details on the basis of a broad vision and to attain depth by beginning on the surface. It is necessary to plot a straight path through terrain that has been leveled. That is why I have given the name Earth to the 1st scroll. The 2nd is the scroll of water. You should learn what is essential regarding the state of the mind from the nature of water. Water follows the form of a square or round vessel. It is a drop and also an ocean. The color of its depth is pure green, and taking this purity as my inspiration, I present my school in the scroll of water. If you succeed in clearly discerning the general principle of the art of the sword, and in this manner easily defeat one person, you can defeat any opponent. The mind is the same whether it is a matter of defeating one person or 1,000 or 10,000 enemies. The strategy of a general consists in applying on a large scale what he has studied on a small scale. This is the same thing as designing a large statue of the Buddha on the basis of a model of 30 centimeters. It is difficult to explain it in detail, but the principle of strategy is to know 10,000 things from a single thing. It is in this way that I write about the content of my school in the Scroll of Water. The third scroll is that of fire. In this scroll, I write about war, for fire symbolizes a blazing mind, whether small or large. The way of war is the same if the situation is one against one or 10,000 against 10,000. This should be examined well, making the mind now large, now small. Seeing what is large is easy. Seeing what is small is difficult. It is difficult to change strategy quickly when you are many, whereas a single person quickly changes his tactics in accordance with his state of mind. That is why, for such a case, it is difficult to foresee the minute details. This should be examined well. That which I write about in the Scroll of Fire happens in a short time. Therefore, it is necessary to train in it and habituate oneself to it every day, so that an immutable mind can become the ordinary thing. This is an essential point of strategy. It is in relation to this mind that I write about war and individual combat in the Scroll of Fire. The fourth is the Scroll of Wind. What I write in this scroll is not about my own school, but deals with the strategies of other present-day schools. We use the expressions the ancient wind and the modern wind, and also the wind of such and such a family. I explain the strategies of the other schools and their techniques in the Scroll of Wind. Without knowing others, one cannot really know oneself. In the practice of all the ways and in all manners of working with things, the danger exists of deviating from the true way. Even if you practice the way daily and think you are on the right track, it is possible to deviate from the true way if your mind has turned away from it. You can recognize this if you know how to observe on the basis of the true way. If you are not progressing along the true way, a slight twist in the mind can become a major twist. This must be pondered well. In other schools, it is thought that just the way of the sword constitutes strategy, and not without reason. But what I understand by the principle and the techniques of strategy is quite different. I write about the other schools in the Scroll of Wind so as to acquaint you with their strategy. The fifth is the Scroll of Heaven, or emptiness. With regard to that which I mean by heaven, how could one distinguish between the depth of it and its entrance, since what we are talking about is emptiness? After having realized the principle of the way, it becomes possible to move away from it. You will find yourself naturally free in the way of strategy, and you will naturally reach a high level of ability. You will naturally find the cadence that is appropriate to the moment, and the stroke will appear all by itself and strike home by itself. All of that is the way of emptiness. I write in the Scroll of Heaven of the manner of entering naturally into the true way. I give my school the name School of Two Swords. I describe my school in terms of two swords, since all warriors, from the vassals to the ordinary soldier, must wear two swords firmly at their sides. Formerly, these two swords used to be called tachi and katana. Today, they are called katana and wakizashi. It goes without saying that all warriors wear these two swords in their belts. Whether they know how to use them or not, in our country, carrying the two swords is the way of the warrior. It is in order to make the advantage of carrying the two swords understood that I describe my school in terms of the two swords. The lance and the naginata are weapons to be used outside on the field of battle. In my school, a beginner learns the way by taking the large sword and the small sword in his hands at the same time. This is essential. If you are going to die in battle, it is desirable to utilize all the weapons you are carrying. It is deplorable to die with weapons left in their scabbard